Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week, believe it or not, of January 1st, 2016. Congratulations for making it through 2015, DR.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Anyway, we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. DR Tucker. How are you doing, DR?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well. I hope you had a happy New Year's Eve, and that you're fully functional with us today.
Thanks.
I, for my part, am doing okay. Anyway, it's great. So 2016 is upon us. 2016 is upon us. Tell me, DR, there's lots and lots of stuff that's going to come up this year. Let me just tick off some of the things that we hope to discuss that are out there, and maybe we'll get through all of them. Of course, there's an issue of the implementation. So from my perspective, 2016 is going to be a year of consolidation. All right.
Yes.
2015 was fireworks. We had Clean Power Plan. We had the Pope. We had Paris. Right. Now it's left to us to pick up the pieces and make all that stuff go. So you've got the Paris Agreement that bears continuing support. We're going to have the President's Climate Plan that is going to be in court. We have the Exxon Gate, which is my term of phrase, but the Exxon Gate thing that is going to march throughout the year. Mm-hmm. Then beyond that, we've got things like later in the year, we have the TPP, and for 2016, the big, big enchilada is going to be the November elections, right?
Yes, definitely.
So let's kind of rewind and talk about these things a little bit, one at a time. Mm-hmm. COP21, which now has faded into history, right? It's the Paris Agreement. Do you see anything in particular that climate hawks are going to have to focus on and do this coming year to support the COP20? Even though the Paris Agreement is this global thing, there's a real synergy between local stuff and global stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you see any connections that our listeners should think about?
Definitely, there should be a lot of activism in terms of encouraging various states and obviously the federal government to sort of maintain the commitments made in the COP21 deal. It's going to be interesting to see if you see more of what Secretary of State John Kerry mentioned the day after the deal was closed, which is more investment in clean energy, more of a financial turn away from investing in oil, coal, and natural gas, and more of an investment in renewables, to where, you know, everybody talks about the power of the free market, to see just how effectively the free market moves in terms of nurturing clean energy.
And I think that the tie back from the Paris Agreement back into U.S. politics, to state politics and local politics, is the fact that the president's Clean Power Plan calls for individual plans in each of the 50 states, right? Mm-hmm. And so everybody who's listening to this show, if you live in the United States, your state has responsibility to put up a plan, right? Mm-hmm. And people can focus on that as something that they want to make the best plan for their state as possible, right?
Exactly. I mean,
that's
exactly
a linchpin. It's a way to connect the global and the local, right? Because it comes right back down to what's going to happen in the coal plant in your town, or the power, you know, how does your town get its electricity, right?
Exactly. Thinking globally and acting locally, as they say.
So there's lots of connections there. Here in Massachusetts, of course, we've talked about the fact that we want to replace the Pilgrim nuclear plant with some kind of wind and, you know, green energy, right?
Yes.
Here in Massachusetts, we have multiple gas pipelines that are being proposed to crisscross the state, and that gives you the opportunity to stand up and scream no more fossil fuel infrastructure, because the world has agreed we're not going to need any of that by the year 2050, right?
Exactly. And we shouldn't be needing it in 2016 either.
Right. So, I mean, there's lots of this coming year, and for many years going forward, of course, but this is, we now begin the work of connecting the Paris Agreement to the local things that are happening in our community as one way to discuss it, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot, certainly in Massachusetts, there's lots of very specific policy decisions that are being made. And it's easy to talk about that in the abstract, but anybody who's listening to this show can pick up their phone and call their state representative and tell them to get on the stick, right?
Exactly. I mean,
that's
exactly
the connection. That's where it matters.
Exactly.
So I mean, the president's Clean Power Plan, just, we should expect it to be under heavy legal fire all year long, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right,
yeah. Definitely. It's understood that I think before the end of the year, it will be heard by the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. And then ultimately it will make it its way in, I guess, either 2017 or 2018 to the U.S. Supreme Court. And we'll see what happens there. Hopefully it's upheld in both courts, because obviously if it goes the other way, that's an international disaster.
Yeah.
If that is struck down, that will not be good.
There's I read an article that actually you sent me, DR, that suggested that the state of North Carolina is going to create an intentionally bad plan that mm-hmm. fails the criteria and send it off to the EPA to see if they can get the EPA to reject the plan at an early date, which would then force an early court case, so these guys can have their day in court as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at some level, maybe it's a good thing. If you think the politics, if you think the law is on the side of the Clean Power Plan, maybe it's a good thing to get it out of the way. But I think then there's a lot of other states that are nominally, I think West Virginia, for example, is opposed mm-hmm. to the whole thing, but they're going to put up a plan anyway, because they know yep. they're going to put up a plan in good faith, even though they don't like to do it.
Exactly. And you would figure that West Virginia, you know, they would understand that Clean Power Plan or no Clean Power Plan, the day of coal is over and it's time to go to new energy sources. So you might as well, you know, embrace the potential of the Clean Power Plan to sort of compel a transition to those clean energy sources.
Yeah. I mean, how many people would they need to build wind turbines on top of all those mountains that have already been flattened mm-hmm. in, anyway, mm-hmm. that's that's kind of stuff you should keep your eyes open for in the new year. The other mm-hmm. interesting thing that will pop up at various times in the new year is the court case against Exxon for withholding information from its shareholders, and basically the fact that they knew their product was defective in 1977, but they continued mm-hmm. to sell oil and put up a political front up to, I would say, the present day, right?
Exactly, and it will also be interesting to see if there's any evidence uncovered of other fossil fuel companies doing their own research that prove the connection between burning fossil fuels and climate change, and then suppressing that evidence the same way Exxon is alleged to have done, and seems to have obviously done, if you ask me. But it'll be interesting to see if that comes out as well, to see if Shell and BP and all the rest did the same thing Exxon did.
Right. So those are sort of overarching topics that will continue to come up through the course of the year. I guess, DR, we were talking before about a court case here in Massachusetts that will pop up in early January.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going on there?
It's going to be a hearing in front of the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, basically in a lawsuit filed by the Group R Children's Trust, which basically says that, you know, there is an atmospheric trust doctrine that compels states to use the best available science to set their policies for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. It'll be interesting to see if the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court goes to a place where other courts around the country have not gone, and if they essentially rule that, yes, Massachusetts has a duty under this concept known as the atmospheric trust doctrine to use the best available science to ramp down emissions, and to see if the Supreme Judicial Court actually mandates specific carbon reduction policies. It'll be a very, very interesting case.
And I think
which will have national implications, obviously.
The distinction being that this public trust doctrine is more than saying that a government has to accept laws, grudgingly accept laws and regulations. It's rather that the government has a positive duty, sort of fiduciary responsibility to protect these things and has to
Exactly.
proactively do stuff, right? That's the distinction here, right?
Exactly. And it'll be interesting to see, if the Supreme Judicial Court does, blaze the same trail they blazed with marriage equality, to see what the sort of reaction will be from elected officials in this state. We remember the nasty reaction elected officials had to the Goodridge ruling, where we see a similar sort of attempted backlash politics here.
Right, and again, there's a big analogy there, right? It's like all of a sudden the court is forcing the legislative and executive branches to do things that they might not want to do, right? And that's so that'll be an itch. So that's coming up. It'll be early in the year, January 8th. They're hearing
Yes,
the
the
court
hearings are
case.
January 8th, and it'll be interesting to see how shortly thereafter we'll have a ruling from the Supreme Judicial Court.
And so then the other thing, let's switch to the left coast. Way up in the state of Washington, there's some fireworks going off too about climate change, right?
Yes, there's been a push for some time now to have Washington State become the first state to implement a sort of carbon pricing policy. And recently it was reported that a group called Carbon Washington, which is trying to implement a revenue neutral carbon tax, a carbon tax in which they'll implement a gradually rising price on carbon emissions, and yet a portion of it will be used to reduce the state sales tax, another portion of it will be return to citizens as a dividend. That they have decided to submit signatures, 350,000 signatures, and then my understanding
Three
is,
hundred and fifty thousand signatures.
yes, they
Wow.
garnered. They're going to submit them to the state legislature, and my understanding is that the state legislature will decide either to vote yes or no as to whether to implement this revenue neutral carbon tax, or whether they'll decide to allow this to go to the state as a ballot initiative in November. So it'll be very, very interesting to see if, in fact, Washington State follows the lead of British Columbia and becomes the first American state to implement a revenue neutral carbon tax policy.
And there was a little suspense there because for a few moments, the advocates who had collected the signatures had a moment of fear and loathing and almost did not submit the 350,000 signatures.
Yes, there were some indications that the polling didn't portend a favorable result for this policy, and they were considering embracing another policy which would implement a revenue positive carbon tax that a revenue positive policy that would implement a gradually rising fee on carbon emissions and use all the collected revenues to fund clean energy projects. But basically, a decision was made by the Carbon Washington group that if they decided to abandon the revenue neutral carbon tax proposal, they would essentially break faith with the people who had signed all those signatures, the 350,000 people. So they're decided to go ahead with trying to get this revenue neutral carbon tax passed. They believe that with enough activism and with enough education of the public, they can get the support that appeared to not be there prior to this decision to go all the way with it. And it will be very, very interesting to see if they can pull together what they have committed themselves to pulling together, which is a sort of a bipartisan embrace of this concept. It seemed unlikely if you watched that, I think it was episode 5 of Years of Living Dangerously and some of the goings on in Washington State. It seemed unlikely that they could make something, they could get a bipartisan policy that would appeal to both sides of the aisle. But the organizers are very, very committed to doing this, and we'll see if they succeed or if they don't succeed.
So we should expect a some sort of legislative news in January, and potentially the whole thing then bounces off to the November election, where the citizens get to actually vote on a ballot question, right?
Exactly. The legislative session will begin on January 11th, and apparently at that time it'll be determined whether or not to vote for this up or down, or whether or not to turn this over as and to allow it as a ballot initiative for the public to vote on in November.
So then in May. So we've gone from January now. Well, let's jump out to May 2016. What we anticipate seeing is that the much maligned, dreaded, and generally terrible trade pact called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or the TPP, will resurface in the halls of Congress, right? So the TPP is this trade deal that has really irritated climate hawks because of the provision that it would effectively allow Exxon to sue the U.S. government in some, what is it? What's the word? Monkey trial kind of
Exactly.
tribunal if the United States passed a carbon tax. And of course, you know the Exxon would, right? So tell me, DR, what happens in May with the TPP?
There is a report, I think it was from Bloomberg News, saying that the vote is scheduled to take place on or around May 18th on in the House as to whether or not to basically approve or give a thumbs down to the TPP. It's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens there because, as you know, there is support for this trade deal across the political aisle, and there is opposition to the trade deal across the political aisle. So it'll be quite interesting to see what happens there. Obviously, President Obama is still relentlessly promoting this. He's been writing op-eds all over the country, basically talking about how sweet of a deal this is. He's yet to convince anybody who's opposed to this deal
Yeah.
to change their minds.
Much as I love him,
And
he hasn't convinced me yet.
I think that, the pushback is quite aggressive on this. I think we've mentioned before, the radio host Tom Hartman is saying that a lot of the political opposition to it from the right, they're calling this deal Obama trade. He's called it, as we've said before, the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement, SHAFTA. That's what he's calling it. So between the two, no matter what insult you can come up with, it doesn't look like it may survive scrutiny by Congress.
But the place where a climate hawk could make an impact is by communicating to their Congress people and or senator disapproval, right? To tell them that you know what's in the TPP and you're not happy about it, and that you insist that they not vote for it. So the TPP is coming up in May, but then we will trudge through a summer full of red, white, and blue balloons and talking heads on TV to finally get to the November elections, right? That is the big deal for 2016. And tell me, what's at stake for climate hawks in the 2016 election?
Obviously, everything's at stake, not only the Clean
I mean, the
Power
whole
Plan,
world is at stake.
but also control of the federal courts. And I've always said before, if you're concerned about these policies, the federal courts are what you have to pay attention to. Because, if you think about the Massachusetts versus EPA ruling, one vote going the other way and there'd be no Clean Power Plan to begin with. So everybody has to pay attention not only to that, but also, the control of the United States Senate, because obviously they determine who gets on the federal courts and who does not. And if you think back to all the controversies of years past involving confirmation hearings and considering who ended up on the court and who did not end up on the court and what they would have done to policies such as the Clean Power Plan, those are two things that everybody has to pay serious attention to.
I think that from my perspective, the 2016 election basically puts the Paris Agreement in the at risk, right? A new president who was not a climate hawk would take it upon himself to ruin the fragile global consensus by saying the United States isn't going to do what it had promised to do. Things like that could easily screw up the nurturing and growth of the Paris Agreement framework. Right? So for my money, that's where the rubber hits the road of the 2016 elections. And so when people go into that polling booth to vote, you can vote for anybody you want, but please know what their climate stance is and please agree with their climate stance, right? That's
And
all.
when you already have at least one of the presidential candidates saying that he will basically completely gut the deal and will walk away from the deal, just openly saying that he's going to do this if he gets elected, it's something to keep in mind because, it's either future generations or degeneration if you think about it.
Right. I mean, this is voter education. I mean, this is an issue that matters, and understanding what your favorite candidate thinks about it is very, very important as part of your duty as a citizen, I would say. Anyway, DR, we have to leave. Well, we're just beginning 2016, so we're not leaving anything. But this is a little taste of the stuff that will be coming up, and I'm sure there's going to be other entertaining topics to discuss in 2016. But it looks
Definitely.
like a year of doing the heavy lifting to make things go right, right?
Exactly.
So, our listeners can check out most of what we've discussed at the blog. It's massclimateaction.net/blog. Leave us a comment. Tell us if you agree with us or disagree with us, or if you think we ought to talk about something else. You can find us on Facebook at /MassClimateAction. Please share our show so that other people can catch up with us. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using TuneIn Radio or Stitcher. Those apps are available on the internet tubes. I'm sure you can find them. You can also find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. Please subscribe to us and share us so that other people can find out about the show. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We wish you all a wonderful, happy, healthy, and hearty 2016. And we'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.